JC Corcoran Podcast.
Just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over.
Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023, you are at jcontheline.com. How you doing, kids? So last night I'm watching the NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt. Two nights ago, their kicker piece was about John Fogerty, a very poignant piece about the fact that when he was a young man with Creedence Clearwater Revival, he signed away the rights to basically all of the music that he wrote and produced and recorded that we listened to and we've been listening to over the last 50 years. And sort of like his lifelong battle to try to win back the opportunity to take control of his own music. And his music was being used for commercial and everything. He didn't have anything to say about it. He had no say in the matter. I still remember because we were talking about this on the air. I remember Carl, the intern, really had almost a visceral reaction to this because it was a commercial and it was like one of these all-American type 4th of July type things about barbecues or grills or hot dogs or something in the backyard and kids splashing. And it was supposed to be this, you know, very, very almost patriotic, all American type theme to this commercial. And they used Fortunate Son, which, as I said, I've already identified, John Fogerty had nothing to say about it. He didn't own the rights to his own music. The only problem is Fortunate Son is a protest song, as most of you probably already know. Some folks are born to wave the flag, who the red, white, and blue, but that's the only lyric that they use. Then the music fades down and the announcer on the commercial starts talking. Fortunate Son. Some folks are born to wave the flag, who the red, white, and blue, and when the band plays Hail to the Chief, ooh, they point the cannon at you. It ain't me, it ain't me, I ain't no millionaire's son, I ain't no fortunate one. You know, and people are like, wait a minute, that's not even what that song means. So there were, you know, embarrassing situations like that. And, you know, Proud Mary was used for, God, everything. So it's been a lifelong battle for John Fogerty. I remember being part of an interview with him back in the 90s, and he was talking about it then, about how upset he was. And, you know, he didn't perform for the longest time because he didn't want anybody to make any money off him singing songs that he wasn't getting paid for. So anyhow, the other night, NBC News does this piece about how John Fogerty has finally gotten back control of his songs, of his music catalog. And it was a very, very nice piece. So that was two nights ago. So last night, I can't say that I was watching the news, but the news was on in the corner. And you know, coming up next, John Fogerty, blah, blah. I'm like, wait a minute, hold it. I thought my brain was going to explode because I'm like, wait, This can't be. They're not going to do two stories about John Fogerty on consecutive nights. What is happening in my brain? And I really just sort of flipped out for a minute. And they came back, and it was, in fact, a second piece about John Fogerty on two consecutive nights on NBC News. Why? Well, it turns out John Fogerty shows up over at the NBC studios, and Lester Holt, unbeknownst to all of us, is a bass guitar player. And to make a long story short, at John Fogerty's concert the other night, he brought Lester Holt up on stage, and he got to play bass for one of the, I think it was the encore song, for John Fogerty, who now plays in a band that is filled with his family members. I think it's maybe two sons and a daughter, and they play in the band, and they sound great. John Fogerty was a wonderful interview, by the way. I loved talking to him. Speaking of music, here we go again. I guess it just must be the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's thing to go out of their way to upset people, So a couple of hours ago, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announced its 2023 inductees. Very happy for Sheryl Crow. Very, very big fan of Sheryl Crow. Happy to see her get in. Willie Nelson is going in. George Michael, that was the audience pick. That was the thing you could get online and vote on. The Spinners, great band, not rock and roll. Rage Against the Machine, not my cup of tea. And then you get Missy Elliott and Kate Bush. Stop 100 people on a street corner in downtown St. Louis and ask them to name one Kate Bush song. I'd be surprised if you got four or five people who even knew one. I know a lot of people don't take Sheryl Crow seriously. I do. About a year or so ago, they started running that documentary about, it's called Sheryl, and it was excellent. It was excellent. She talks just a lot about the music business and everything like that. And even if you're not a fan of Sheryl Crow, it's a pretty good documentation of the music industry and sort of what was going on pretty much in the 90s and early part of the 2000s. And I'm not even going to start in on the whole idea of what singers and what bands, what acts continue to be snubbed by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I don't know what the hell Ian Anderson ever did to anybody, but Jethro Tull just year in and year out, over and over again, just gets boned. Speaking of getting boned, we are. So those of you who follow me on Facebook, you're ahead of the game here. You already know where I'm going with this. We got into a very, very spirited conversation with some of our followers on Facebook last night. But, I distinctly remember a Saturday night, a ball game of the Cardinals at Busch Stadium back in 2018, and the Redbirds were just getting thumped and getting thumped over and over and over again. Team was not winning. They looked listless. They looked tired. I don't know what the deal was, but it was this Saturday night, and the Cardinals were just getting run out of their own ballpark. And I got on social media, and I said, "You just saw the end of Mike Matheny as manager." The next day, Mike Matheny was dismissed as Cardinal manager. And people were like, "What was your connection? What was your source? How did you know that?" As I, my source was my brain, and having been watching baseball for the last 70 years, all right, 65. And I just knew that the team, the franchise, just even as a business, could not possibly continue under these circumstances. And so I, stuck my neck out on social media and printed that, and it turned out I was right. It was a guess, but it was a damn educated guess, if you ask me. And as I was watching the game last night, I thought to myself, I wonder if John Mozeliak and Ollie Marmol might be about to have one of those nights. The team is 10 and 20. We're in last place, and we look terrible doing it. Somebody tells Steve Matz, starting pitcher last night for the Cardinals, that Memphis is really nice this time of year because I think that's where he's going. And things don't get any easier either because we have to face Ohtani tonight, who was not in the lineup last night, and a lot of people felt really cheated and shortchanged, but, that's the way the ball bounces. And then, there's a game tomorrow afternoon, and weather people are predicting heavy rain. But that won't move in until after midnight. Friday is going to be the problem. If you got tickets for Friday's game, man, high 64, 90% chance of rain, half an inch of rain, and that rain continues into Friday night. Weekend looks good, though. Let's just suffice to say that Cardinal Nation is restless right now. The 24-hour news channels are all over this morning, about 2 o'clock in the morning, overnight. A drone approached one of those big domes that's part of the Kremlin complex, and then exploded right above the dome. And Putin's jumping around going, Ukraine did it, Ukraine did it. And because you tried to blow me up, this was an assassination attempt. Now, because you did that, I get to do whatever I want. And maybe that even means nukes. Now, there's a couple of problems with that. There are multiple layers of air defense in Moscow. So the chances of something being launched from Ukraine all the way to Moscow without one of those defense systems being sent off, very, very small. Some would say it's an impossibility. Also, there aren't any drones that anybody knows about, especially military functioning drones, that could travel that distance. So the Pentagon is just basically saying, this is a hoax. This is some sort of controlled thing. Even the videos don't look like they're completely legitimate. So is old Vladimir Putin, manufacturing something so that he can basically approach the world court, if you will, the court of public opinion and say, hey, they tried to kill me. They launched an attack at me. That was the Ukraine guys. It's starting to sound like everybody on this side of the world is just assuming that this was a hoax. As we were talking yesterday about the worst possible scenario for me has occurred now with the writer's strike. They're not even close. This is going to be a long strike. I'm afraid this could go all the way into the fall. And while that's going on, this whole James Corden story took an interesting turn yesterday, because he said, I want to go back. My family and everything is over in Europe or in London, and I want to go back home. I miss my crumpets and my tea. And that was the story that everybody sort of went with. Well, now it turns out that the network, CBS, has come along and said, well, part of the problem with all of this is that the show was too expensive. We were spending more than we were making on it. Apparently, whatever they decided to pay James Corden, along with the normal production costs, just to put a show on every night, and then some of the stuff like carpool karaoke and some of the other bits that he did were apparently very, very expensive. And their story is, CBS, is that, we were just not making enough money off the show. And so that's really the story behind the departure of James Corden. So we'll see. Now, Stephen Colbert has control of the hour after his show. And the story is that there was this, remember Chris Hardwick, comedian Chris Hardwick? They did a show on Comedy Central called At Midnight. And it was funny because it was sort of like a game show, but not really. And they just made up the number of points that somebody would win if you got the answer. Ryan, it's like, you got that right. Let's give you 50,000 points. And it's like, 50,000? And they're just making it up as they went. It was actually pretty funny that way. So apparently, for whatever reason, that show went off the air, but there was something that Colbert liked about it. And he said, he went to CBS and said, no, I think there's something there. And I think if we come back and take another run at Midnight, put in a new host, it won't be Chris Hardwick. We'll put in a new host and rework it a little bit, retool it a little bit. We think we've got something. And so by fall, if the writer's strike is over by then, that's the show that you're going to see after Colbert. But in the meantime, and some people have said, those people make too much money. Well, who makes too much money? The writers? No, they don't. It's like anything else. If you make your way to the complete upper echelon, I mean, you're like the head writer for The Tonight Show or something like that. Yeah. Then you make like $750,000 a year. But the overwhelming majority of people, and I'm talking like 95% of all of the writers who write scripts for whether it's comedy shows or, CSI or whatever, those people are not cleaning up. And especially now with all the new forms of revenue being generated with streaming, all the different channels and Netflix and all that sort of stuff, these writers are barely getting a sliver of the action. And that's what they want. And they're not getting it. And so that's why you got a strike. And the thing is, they're really far apart. They are really far apart. Pete Davidson was supposed to host Saturday Night Live this weekend, and that's been called off. One of Jimmy Fallon's employees tweeted that he doesn't appear to be supporting his staff during the strike. Meanwhile, Jay Leno brought donuts to striking writers, and Rob Lowe and Natasha Lyonne were both spotted on a picket line at Paramount out in California. Now, back in 2000, 2007 was the last strike, and they cut basically a 15-year deal, and that deal is up now. But if you go even back further than that, there was a writer's strike in the late 80s. And I still remember, in the case of David Letterman, for example, you know, they were off the air for a couple of months, and then some, and I don't know how this worked out, and I'm trying to find the answer to this right now, because I'm fascinated by this. You know, you don't want scabs. If you've ever been part of any sort of union action, man, there's nothing worse than a scab. But Letterman was off the air for a couple of months, and then finally they said, look, we just can't afford this. We can't afford to do this. So they came back on the air after a couple of months, and instead of having a long 15-joke monologue, he just wrote his own jokes. And he wrote like three jokes. They did a real short monologue, and then they went into the show, which was mostly music and comedic performances and guests. So they in that particular case, they said, we're going to do this without writers. Now, why David Letterman was not ostracized for that, I don't know. Because you wouldn't think that that would have gone over very well with the people who had been writing for his show who are out of a job and picketing. So the part of that story that I'm missing, like I said, when I find out what it is, and I'll find out. I'll let you know. I-55, they had to close it down again yesterday, as you probably heard. They're saying now 72 vehicles were involved in that initial crash situation. And it was both north and southbound, incidentally. And just to show you how horrific that scene was up there between Litchfield and Springfield, they're going through the rubble and the debris yesterday, and they're like, hey guys, wait a minute. And they found another body that apparently was so, well, I don't want to go into the details, but you can sort of figure this out. But they realized there was one more death, and they realized that yesterday. Wow. I was trying to figure out how many times I was up and down I-55 right along there in the last 39 years since I moved to St. Louis. But it had to be close to 100 times. You know, my parents were still living in Chicago, and then you had all those Cub Cardinals series. I was there for all that. So let's just say it's 2 to 3 times a year that I drove to Chicago. Well, times 39. That's a lot. Like I said, close to 100. So I know that area well. I also know whatever you do, you start slowing down as you approach Springfield heading north on the way to Chicago. You better slow down because those county mounties are there. Those state troopers are there and they're waiting for you. When this E. Jean Carroll trial started, you know, Donald Trump, she's suing Donald Trump, and they think that the jury might get this thing by Monday, and Trump hasn't showed up, and he's not gonna. And last night, I forget which network this was, but they had Lisa Rubin on, who is a legal analyst, and she addressed the whole idea of what Trump's strategy might be right now, particularly with the idea of not showing up for the trial.
On one hand, Donald Trump is trying to signal to this jury, this is beneath me. This isn't even significant enough for me to show up. That's how much of a liar this woman is. On the other hand, it's a very smart strategy for his lawyers to keep him away, because we've read excerpts of his deposition in this case. They were released as part of motion practice in the case in January. And that deposition was, Mehdi, just a disaster for Donald Trump. That's the deposition where, confronted with a picture of himself and his then wife, Ivana Trump, meeting E. Jean Carroll and her then husband, John Johnson, he looked down and said, oh, that's Marla, mistaking her for his second wife, Marla Maples. The problem is that Marla Maples was exactly his type. In fact, he's been videotaped saying in a very bizarre way that he hoped his then one-year-old daughter would turn out to be every bit as beautiful as Marla Maples, and talked about particular physical attributes, right?
So I remember that.
Yes, it was quite disturbing. But if Marla Maples was his type, and then he looks at a picture of E. Jean Carroll and thinks it's Marla Maples, how then is it credible for him to say, she's not my type, which, as E. Jean Carroll testified, is basically a translation for, she's too ugly to assault.
Well, like I said, they think that thing might go to the jury by Monday. All right, I got a bunch of little bits and pieces here. Let's get to them. Ed Sheeran is involved in a lawsuit too. They say he ripped off Marvin Gaye. Ed Sheeran now saying that he will quit the music industry if he loses this copyright lawsuit. Sounds a little bit like a little cream puff, huh? If you go to my Facebook page, Showgram with J.C. Corcoran, I put up a picture yesterday. People are always accusing me of exaggerating stories, and I always tell people I lived 2 blocks from Midway Airport, and at night, sometimes we'd sit on our front porch, and the planes were so low you could look in and actually see the outline of heads through the windows. And people were like, oh, right. Just like in Annie Hall, Woody Allen lived under a roller coaster and it shook the whole house. Yeah, we know. Well, a friend of mine in Chicago posted a picture of my old neighborhood with a Southwest Airlines jet landing, and it looks like it's just going to land in the driveway of the house. And the problem is, you're like a little kid. You're 6, 7, 8 years old. You're in grade school, and your grade school is literally across the street from the runway. And about every 8 or 9, 10 years, a plane would go down on the perimeter of the airport. So you're 6, 7, 8 years old, and you're sitting there going, why should I bother studying? It's only a matter of time before a 747 just crashes right into the school and kills all of us. But if you look at that picture on my Facebook page, The Showgram with Tracy Corcoran, and you think I'm exaggerating? Well, let's just put it this way. You won't say that, all right? The internet is just full of so much garbage that, you know, I'm seriously considering just posting and taking away the comments section, because even though I've purged about 1,100 troublemakers from my page, you know, just blocked about just over 1,000 people over the course of the last couple of years, every once in a while somebody still manages to slip in and just defecate all over everything I've posted. But every once in a while you do get something, and this one I'm going to hold on to. Just think about this for a minute, okay? The one who plants trees knowing that he will never sit in their shade has started to understand the meaning of life. Let that soak in a little bit. By the way, over the weekend, after they announced the passing of Mike Shannon, Channel 5 was saying that Mike Shannon shared a radio booth with Harry Carey. That's not true, because Harry left after the 69 season, and Shannon didn't start broadcasting until 1972. Wrong! Extra show! That's my imitation of Dana Carvey's imitation of John McLaughlin from the McLaughlin Group. Wrong! Extra show! The National Research Group conducted a nationwide survey of people 12 to 74 to see which actors have the most box office appeal. The top 20, starting at number 20, Chris Hemsworth, Morgan Freeman, Angelina Jolie at 18, Robert Downey Jr., George Clooney, Harrison Ford at 15, Adam Sandler, Ryan Reynolds, Sandra Bullock, Keanu Reeves, Kevin Hart, Johnny Depp, Leonardo DiCaprio, Will Smith at 7, Julia Roberts at 6, Denzel Washington, Brad Pitt, Tom Hanks, The Rock at number 2, and number 1, Tom Cruise. Now, what's interesting here to me is that you got the top 20 names and only 3 are women. Seems to me that Scarlett Johansson's name should be on this list. You'd think so. Oh, by the way, you know, I had very nice things to say about this movie Air, about the invention of the Air Jordan shoe. Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, bunch of really good actors in this thing. And it just opened in theaters a couple of weeks ago, but it's already going to Amazon Prime starting on Friday. And it's worth your time. Pure entertainment, well written, not an ounce of fat on this movie. It is not a movie about basketball. It is not a movie about Michael Jordan. It is not. It's a movie about business. And I say this because people are like, oh, my kids are like in their teens and they love Michael Jordan. It's like, no. Well, first of all, I don't think they'd find it that interesting. But there's at least one scene in the movie involving the guy who plays Michael Jordan's agent, and played by Chris Messina, good actor, that you don't want your kids to see. But like I said, even the larger issue above and beyond that is I just don't think they would find it that interesting. It's a movie about business and strategy. And so it's a movie for grown-ups. Tomorrow, Star Wars Day. Sorry, not a fan. Rihanna, Super Bowl performance. Now the most watched halftime show in history. They now say 121 million people watched that. And by the way, that is the correct pronunciation of her name. For years, people have been saying Rihanna. A couple of months ago, she said, it's Rihanna. You know, like the song Rhiannon, like the witch? I don't know why people are mispronouncing my name, but it's Rihanna. Birthday's today. All right. I say she had a boob job. And I say that because she was in Playboy magazine years ago when she was a young woman. And the body type isn't even the same. We're talking Christina Hendricks from Mad Men. And as much as I want to believe that they're real, I just can't. And I'll put the picture up. on Facebook later today, and it just seems impossible that a woman's body could have that much of a transformation. And I should know, I'm a licensed babetician. Yeah, she's 48 today. Christopher Cross, 72. Greg Gumbel, 77. Frankie Valli, 89. Do you know I hate the Four Seasons? If they come on the radio, I lunge for the knob and turn the channel. I cannot stand Frankie Valli and the music of the Four Seasons. Ugh! It was 35 years ago today. The year was 1988. The White House admitted that Nancy Reagan had been consulting with psychic advisors to help schedule her husband's activities. What's interesting about astrology is that even people who aren't into it seem to find out when Mercury is in retrograde. And if you don't know anything about astrology, it just basically means that everything's fucked up. They say you're not supposed to sign a contract or buy a house or, you know, do anything of great consequence while Mercury is in retrograde. And that's where we are right now. I believe Mercury comes out of retrograde sometime around the 15th of May. It's somewhere right in there. And it was 32 years ago today, 1991, Dallas aired its series finale on CBS. 33 million people tuned in, making it the 11th highest rated series finale ever, just behind Frasier. And here's another one of those great stories. The year was 1987. I had left Casey. I'd been off the air for, I don't know, the better part of a year, and I was getting ready to come back on the air on 93.7 KSD, the classic rock station. All right, 1987. Now, the cable penetration in St. Louis was way, way behind the curve. Many, many major American cities had, you know, 60, 70% penetration of cable in their cities. But like I said, St. Louis was way behind. So in 1987, pretty much it was still a network TV game. And so on a Sunday night, the Gannett Corporation, the people who own USA Today and owned our radio station, said, we're going to run what's called a roadblock campaign. So he shot a TV commercial, and then they went to all three TV stations and said, we want this commercial to run at, like, you know, 8:12, first commercial break in your network programming. We want this to run at 8:12. Go to channel 2, go to channel 4, go to channel 5. Thus the name Roadblock. So in other words, regardless of what channel people were watching, as far as the network choices were concerned, they were going to see this commercial. There was no way you could escape it. Well, as it turns out, I became controversial even before I said one word into the KSD microphone.
Local St. Louis TV stations have been flooded with calls. John Pertzborn says the viewers all want to know one thing. Is St. Louis becoming radioactive?
All day, people have been talking about something they saw on St. Louis's local TV stations during the past 24 hours.
Well, I was watching TV, and all of a sudden it said something about St. Louis being radioactive, and they had the snow across the TV, and it looked like the TV had gone off for a second, and everything was normal again. What was that all about?
That's what everyone wants to know after seeing this.
Warning. Beginning May 11th, St. Louis will become radioactive.
My husband thought that it was, he's just said nuclear something in my, and I thought maybe it was that train coming through with the radioactive waste on it.
Radioactive. As it turns out, this is only a play on words, a commercial for KS94 radio.
So to put people's minds at ease, there is not going to be a nuclear war. There is not going to be nuclear trains moving through the area, and Chernobyl is not having problems.
I've heard three of those. Absolutely not.
But two stations, including Channel 5, have temporarily pulled the ad, and they're adding a disclaimer to avoid confusion.
Very simply, we're going to say paid advertisement by Gannett Radio. That's all.
But no one was supposed to take the ad literally, which is what happened. And some have even gone as far as to compare it, on a smaller scale, to a famous broadcast made way back in 1938.
That's when Orson Welles broadcast the famous radio drama War of the Worlds. And some people thought the Martians had really arrived and panicked. Which brings us back to the commercial and May 11th.
What's it all about?
Some excitement that's going to take place beginning Monday, May 11th.
But you're not going to say what that is.
The end of the week.
Well, at least St. Louis isn't becoming a Chernobyl. There won't be any fallout. But on May 11th, your radio might become
radioactive.
Whatever that means. I'm John Pertzborn, Channel 5 Eyewitness News.
It doesn't take much to throw people into a tizzy, does it? That's what you call a successful ad campaign, even though my name was nowhere in it. And let me tell you, it really worked. It really worked because it was not long before we became the number one morning radio show among adults in St. Louis. People said, you can't ever knock off Casey. We did, and we did consistently. For several years, in fact. I closed on my very first house on this date in 1985 off of Big Bend and Hanna Road. Sometimes I would just go out in the middle of the street and just turn around and just look at the house because I couldn't believe it. 18 months prior to that, I was living in a dump of an apartment complex in Buffalo, New York. So to be standing in front of a house that I owned, at that time, it didn't even seem possible. On this date, 1986, maybe you were at the show at Westport with Richard Lewis, Elaine Boozler, and Roseanne Barr. Westport Playhouse, part of our comedy series we did out there. Great show. We returned from Moscow, the former Soviet Union, after a week of broadcasts on this date back in 1990. And in 1996, I was in Los Angeles interviewing the stars of the movie Twister, one of the dumbest movies I think I've ever seen. You got Helen Hunt pulling up in a van, getting out and like petting the tornado. And I've saved the best for last because it was on this date 30 years ago today that I became a dad for the very first time. Terrifying experience. Many of you have been through it. I could go on for days remembering and relating to you little details about what happened. 22 and a half hours of labor, by the way. They were just getting ready to do a C-section. The doctor came in and said, no, I think we're going to be okay here. And at 3:36 in the morning, May 3rd, 2023, out she came. And she's been entertaining me and giving me something to be full of love about for the last 30 years. She's doing well. She's living in Louisville, Kentucky. And in the department of the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I've been trying to encourage her to do more of this stuff. And I haven't really convinced her yet that maybe she's got a future in broadcasting. You tell me.
This sports report sponsored by Jefferson College. Quality education, caring faculty, student-centered, extremely affordable. Be more than just a number at Jefferson College. Learn more at jeffco.edu.
I don't know, baby. I think you got the gene. I think you got it.